Willie and D Mace, easy for me to say. ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick today. He'll be back tomorrow. Derek Mace and Nick Frazier. And our friend Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow joining us now. Now, Hutton, I don't know if you just heard Derek's impassioned spiel, for lack of a better term, that doesn't do it justice, about the Tua Tagovailoa, Brian Flores saga, if you want to call it that. Yep. What were your thoughts on that whole dynamic with Tua being so candid with Dan Le Batard, what he said about Flores' coaching style, what Flores said in response, and just the back and forth, the dynamics of coaching in the NFL today? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I didn't hear what D-May said. I thought maybe his impassioned plea was about the bobblehead that broke in the studio. I didn't know.
It could get to that at some point.
Hey, you know, so Dan Le Batard in the Miami area, there's familiarity there. I think Dan still does an hour show after his national show each day that is specific to that part of Florida. And if not, he used to do it. So he knows the Dolphins very, very well. The Brian Flores saga there is peculiar just because of how things have played out and how long it's been, at least in my mind, 2022 with the lawsuit and Tua coming into the league in 2020. And the fact that here we are, Tua's just got his contract and he's still going, you know, that deep, that hard into Flores being, you know, bad for like his playing style. It was, I don't know, the timing was like, we're rehashing this now? Like, this is the first time he's had an opinion on it? Imagine how pissed off Tua was at the beginning. And again, you have Chris Greer. The way I have heard the story told, Chris Greer advocated for Tua, and it was Brian Flores that was on the podium standing on the soapbox for Jordan Love. Not Herbert, but Jordan Love. And they end up with Tua Tagovailoa. And, of course, Herbert's drafted one pick after Tua in that draft. So it's the comparison's always going to be to Herbert, but I think the debate really came down in the draft room to those two. And some coaches are hard asses. I mean, look, that's to me, it's the old school approach to a new school approach. And by and large, there's very few coaches nowadays that have the Brian Flores approach the way Tua described it. If you look across the NFL and the two guys that are rough around the edges, and that's putting it politely, Mike Vrabel and Bill Belichick didn't end up with jobs this past hiring cycle. I don't think there's any coincidence as to what players are expecting now versus maybe, you know, the way you were seeing coaches act and coach on a daily basis and even behind the scenes in terms of tough love. I don't know. To me, some players handle it well, some players don't, but you got to be kidding me that Tua can't take Brian Flores' criticisms played for Nick Saban.
That's what I said. And of course, Derek would know full well what it's like to play.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
For Nick Saban. So we were talking about before that, we were talking about the Titans secondary and what it could be league-wide. How would it stack up against the rest of the NFL if everything clicks right, which, of course, doesn't always happen, but sometimes it does. And Derek thinks that at best-case scenario, that the Titans secondary could be a top-five unit in the NFL if everything works as planned. Where are you on the potential of the Titans secondary if everything clicks, which, again, doesn't always happen, but it could?
Man, I mean, that's... They should be among the top groups in the NFL based on the investment that they've made at the cornerback position alone with L'Jarius Sneed and, you know, the fact that Awuzie is also top flight corner opposite Sneed in this defense. And you got Roger McCreary playing a spot that he should be very, very good at playing with the addition of Diggs. We haven't seen these guys, though. I mean, what, three or four combined practices where we've seen one of the two top signings on the defensive side of the football play so far. I realize it's a one-on-one game for the most part on the outside. This is an aggressive defense. They're on an island. They've got guys that have proven in past seasons that they can be that type of player. But, I mean, until I see it, guys, and Mace, let me know your thoughts here. I'm putting the Browns, the Jets, give me the Dolphins, the Ravens. trying to think through, the Vikings have a good secondary. Certainly the 49ers have been known for it. The Titans should be in the mix for the top 10 spot. They should climb higher than that as the season progresses. But I still look at them as the bottom of this list that I just threw out there in the, off the top of my head. Cowboys, compared to maybe where I thought they'd be at this point, which is they're helping out the Titans pass rush because they're so good at covering on the outside. I'm not trying to be pessimistic about it, guys, but I mean, there are players who practice and players who don't. And right now, we haven't seen the Titans' top two guys out there all that much.
So I found a ranking from Sharp Football Analysis from July 22nd. So from the beginning of training camp, these are the teams that were listed ahead of the Titans in secondary rankings: the Browns, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Bears, the Cowboys, the Ravens, the Patriots, the Saints, the Vikings, the Niners, and the Buccaneers. And they, the Titans were tied with the Chiefs. So that puts them tied for 12th.
Okay. Well, I mean, tied for 12th, which means some separation after the first couple of weeks. And yeah, okay. I think that's about right. I mean, again, because now this is from when? July when?
July 22nd. So right at the start of training camps.
Added. No digs, no additions at the safety spot at that point. So that's, he's going off of that too. So they're probably a top 10 secondary in Warren Sharp's rankings based on what they've done at the safety spot. But it, like you mentioned, they're tied with the Chiefs. The Chiefs have Trent McDuffie, who is a budding star that is now their number one corner. Justin Reed, I believe, is still there at safety. And then Brian Cook. But they dumped Legarius Sneed. And the Titans gain there still has them tied with the Chiefs based on his rankings. He's very good at what he does. I mean, based on the investment made, the Titans secondary should be better than Kansas City's.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it too, Hutt. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, talking all things Tennessee Titans. Yeah, that's how I look at it, in regards to this secondary. I think they can be a top-notch secondary, but all of that hinges on whether, Chidobe can stay healthy. If he comes back for the first game of the season and is healthy, and then Ladarius Sneed. I expect him to hold up the whole season, but, last year and the year before that with the whole managing, probably this year can come to a head, and no matter whether you manage it or not, he's always going to have problems with that knee. So I understand that, but if this team could stay healthy from that in that particular position, I think they should be. And like you said, considering the money they spent – on those two corners, they should be one of the best. History. Yeah, they should be one of the best in the league once they start going.
Yeah, and Wilson, Denard Wilson has said there's no doubt that Legarius Sneed and Awuzie will be ready week one. Okay, so I'll take him for his word there, and they're ready to go. But, I mean, think about how imperative they are, that duo, for week one alone. With Caleb Williams, based on what I've seen, the off-schedule plays are going to be a nightmare. And that's where your investment pays off early because this isn't a Titans pass rush on the edge that gets home all that often. They're looking for four guys they can rotate in and feel comfortable with alongside Harold Landry. The pass rush is from the interior. There are going to be a lot of off-schedule plays based on how the Titans defensive front is built. And that's where Caleb Williams is going to flourish if he's going to early in his rookie season. I doubt they're going to be very structured in how they go about game planning for the Titans, because if not, you're not getting the most out of Caleb Williams at this point. From what I've seen, whenever he's played well in the preseason, been a lot of off-schedule plays, and that puts a lot of pressure on your secondary to show up and show out and win your fair share of battles in a league where the rules are already stacked against you. And it's a pretty good wide receiving core there in Chicago, too. Again, I think it's a fascinating matchup just because you don't really know what to expect from a rookie making his debut in a league where they're going to throw the football and you're rewarded for doing so. And he's going to get out of the pocket and try to make it happen. And then these two corners got to be ready to go for Tennessee. If so, they can get home to him and they can, put him on the ground a few times.
Now let's switch over to the offensive line. I know we've talked about the offensive line ad nauseum. I get it. But recently Brian Callahan said, listen, Brunskill, I mean, not Brunskill, but Frere and who's the guard?
Radins.
Well, yeah, Radins. He said they're trending to be the starters. I'm not too encouraged by trending to be the starter. I think at this point, after two games, you should know who your starters is headed into your third preseason game. But does that leave open the possibility? Because we know how this league works. You followed it a long time.
Go ahead. I know
when
you're
guys
going.
Get hurt, I mean, when guys get cut from other teams, do you think they will be looking to bring in a starting guard or a starting tackle?
Oh, I mean, I think they would love to. But here's the thing. Right now, with that quick of a turnaround, I mean, yeah, Nicholas Petit-Frere is going to be the starting right tackle, and Dylan Radins is at guard. Brunskill's going to make the roster. And then beyond that, I would say Rupcic, with the way they've talked about him, is another one. And they're probably looking for two more guys of this group. There's a lot of mixing and matching going on last week in a game that was all about the backups. That's where I think they try to upgrade the most, Mace, is trying to find the rotational pieces behind Nicholas Petit-Frere and Dylan Radins. And that's just because, I mean, for as difficult as it's been for us to discuss the right side and who's starting and who's not, it's hard to find nine offensive linemen that they'll want to carry on a weekly basis. That's the depth it has to improve drastically. Think about if they have an injury right now on their O-line.
Yeah.
And how they would have to move guys around, because you'd have, you know, if something happened with NPF, or let's say something happens early with J.C. Latham, Nicholas Petit-Frere is probably popping outside the left tackle. Radins is your right tackle, and Brunskill's playing guard. But Brunskill, you know, is also a player who they worked in at center some. They've got Corey Levin. I mean, again, it's a hodgepodge. That to me is where they have to upgrade on the waiver wire is beyond the starting five.
Yeah, you're right about that. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Now looking at this team, obviously, you know, from a offensive standpoint, you know, you look at guys that have played in preseason and guys that haven't played in preseason. I was listening to Jared the other day, and he talked about him being disappointed that some of the guys didn't play in this past preseason game, whether they got a lot of time during the joint practices or not, guys like Burks and some other guys. But I think what he doesn't understand is, and I want to know your opinion based upon those guys not playing in that game, because he's right. Some of these guys do need the reps, but when you've gotten good reps and it's been like game like Temple in practice with another team, I think that's more valuable than then putting them out there during a game and asking them to play a couple of snaps with some guys that are second and third stringers. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how the week went if I'm the coach. Uh-huh. You know,
and like, it seemed like the week went well based upon what Brian Callahan said.
I think it was just predetermined, though, in a way, because like Ridley last week is discussing, I think it was the first practice against Seattle, maybe, about how his tempo wasn't there. Like he wasn't playing fast enough or focused enough within the offense. I was reading an article through the Tennessean on that. Nonetheless, Mace, there's a rhyme and reason to when I would play certain players and when I wouldn't. But there's a reason why this team, I think, needs to play these live reps. And it's especially the offensive line. O-line together, Will Levis with his first true season as this team starter, and trying to get some cohesion going between Ridley and Levis especially. But even last week, we wouldn't have seen Tyler Boyd because of the foot thing. You know, he's back going through a walkthrough yesterday, so that's good. I'm trying to think through. We know we're not going to have D-Hop and see him play. And, you know, you've got Burks who's playing the X because Hopkins is out. And then you have Nick Westbrook-Ikhina who's playing a lot of reps because of the numbers, because he can play every spot at wide receiver. I don't know what one series does, but there was an emphasis on playing them in the first preseason game to get some momentum going. And there's a reason why Levis went back out there to start the second quarter in the week one of the preseason to go score a touchdown and put an emphasis on that offensively. I would be hesitant to just say, hey, you know, we're predetermined. We're not going to play right now. We're not going to play the starters, even though I will say this, the starters got the vast majority of reps, in the joint practices against Seattle. So if you're looking to determine who's going to make your roster and you haven't seen the true depth of your team in a week, that's the time to go throw them out there against competition to show them something that they haven't seen. So whenever this team is a 4-win team or an 8-win team, Mace, or, you know, 10, whatever they end up, we're not going to reference the second preseason exactly. game as a reason why.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Willie and D Mace. Jonathan, thanks. Hutton, I'm sorry I called you by your first name, your formal
name. I did that
name.
Too, but don't worry about it.
Who's Jonathan?
See, that's not the answer he gave me, but that's between Hutton.
Yes, that's for off air. Hutton, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Always enjoy this.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCounty.com. Will Levis is at the podium now. We'll hear what he has to say after practice on the other side. 615-737-1025. Tune into 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Jacksonville. Pre-game at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Be a hero and save a life today at the 11th annual Williamson County Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. Every 2 seconds, someone is in need of blood. And in the last 11 years, this drive alone has collected over 3,000 units of blood, saving up to 9,000 lives. The drive is currently being held at John P. Holt Brentwood Library until 6 p.m. 1025 The Game will be on hand from noon to 2. With swag to give away and a chance to win free concert tickets. So if you're in the area until 2 o'clock at John P. Holt Brentwood Library, 1025 The Game will be out there. And also, donate blood, save a life. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick today. Derek Mason, thanks to Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow for joining us in the previous segment. Will Levis addressing reporters. We will play what he has to say coming up. But Derek, what did you take away from our conversation with Hutton? What stood out to you?
I think he sees this secondary. First, let's address, what he said about the offensive line. I think he's right in the sense of, you know, they pretty much know who their starters are. And if indeed they do bring in more offensive linemen, say guys get cut from other teams that could potentially be starters, they still have to work those guys in. They can't just pick them up from another team and plug them in as a starter. Why? Because they don't know the offense. So they still would have to work their way in to that starting rotation. So he's right from that standpoint, which I didn't think about. So what we see now, I think it's, you know, what they believe it will be first game of the season. But if they can upgrade at that position via some moves that will be made once cuts are made, I'm sure they will. But will it be an immediate guy to start, whether it be at right tackle or right guard? And then what he said about guys playing, I think it was predetermined. Hey, listen, if we can get some good work with these guys in this joint practice, then we're going to hold them out of the preseason. He felt he got good work from Traylon Burks, from the tackle, from the guard, from the receivers. Even in what I was surprised in, even Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who had a good two days of practice with Seattle, he still played in the game. I think he probably wanted to play. I truly believe he wanted to play. They asked whether you want to play or not. I think he wanted to play. Because at the end of the day, I think Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is just a football player. He will play if it's, you know, if you're down 100 or if you're up 100. I think he still wants to go in the game and play because he enjoys playing the position. So I understand what Hutt was saying about, you know, predetermining. And even if they probably didn't have a great practice, he had already predetermined who wasn't going to play and who was. And he stuck with it. Now, some guys that didn't play, I thought they shouldn't have played. He was right. But then some guys that, you know, didn't play, should have played. More importantly, the offensive linemen. I don't care how good you were against, you know, them in practice, I still want to see you out there on the field because we're trying to build this offensive line.
So to your point, Derek, I'll call it a lukewarm endorsement from Brian Callahan when he said that Raidens and Petit Frere are trending in the direction as being the starters. It wasn't a full-throated endorsement. These are our guys. Mm-hmm. And with the problems that the offensive line has had, and they've also had to adjust to the unexpected departure of Sadiq Charles, which, you know, caught everybody by surprise, mm-hmm. including the Titans, who I remember saying, was it last week, that Bill Callahan didn't even hear from Sadiq Charles. Hopefully Sadiq Charles is doing all right. But Wes in Clarksville on our text line says his issue, and I think a lot of people's issue, with the offensive line is they are barely making it as it is. If one or two get hurt now, we are done. We have no depth.
Well, you're right about that. There's no depth on this offensive line. There's not much depth with this team in particular, other than the running back position, the wide receiver position, and gosh, that's really about it. Maybe not even the secondary. I don't know where else do they have depth. Well, maybe the linebackers, you can say they have some depth there. But if you're looking around, there's not much depth on this team behind like the first three or four players. There's not much depth on either side of the ball.
No, there really is not. Teron Davenport, who will be in studio this afternoon with Jake Lyman filling in for Jared starting at 2:00, has some of his camp notes in terms of injuries. Mm-hmm. Teron mentions that Caleb Farley and Tyler Boyd returned to practice.
Well, that's good.
So Farley and Boyd have returned. Boyd was dealing with a bruised foot. No Josh Wiley, Kiaris Jackson, TK McClendon, Luke Gifford, Chidobe Awuzie, or Legarius Sneed. Not a surprise on Awuzie and Sneed. So Tyler Boyd back at practice. And yesterday when you were out, Derek, Willie was talking about Tyler Boyd and expectations for Tyler Boyd. You know, where do you see his role in this offense, and just how important is a player like Boyd, a receiver who goes about the game like Boyd, for the development of a young quarterback like Will Levis?
I think it's pivotal to have somebody like Tyler Boyd, you know, that can speak to what Brian Callahan is trying to do from an offensive standpoint, can speak to, you know, what he believes Will Levis is looking for, so he can tell the younger receivers, even the older receivers, like, man, listen, based upon my experience in this offense, this is what the quarterback should be looking for. This is what you should be doing as a receiver in this offense. So he can be the conduit between, you know, the head coach and the player. You know, not every time they got to run to the head coach / offensive coordinator and ask him questions, or they don't have to run to their receivers coach to ask questions. They can sit there and they can pull Tyler Boyd to a side, because that's the last thing young players want to do, is go to their coach, even though they may have a great relationship with their position coach, go to their coach and say, you know, what do I got on this? Because you just feel like you want your coach to feel as if you know it all. So you go to a guy that's willing to help, that has been in this offense, that's a veteran guy, which Tyler Boyd is. You go to Tyler Boyd and say, listen, did I do what was asked of me? Should I run it a little bit different? And Tyler Boyd should be able to tell you whether there's a guy on the outside or inside based upon what he's been through, what he's seen in his offense. Yeah, you should do it like this. Well, or maybe you did it the right way, but you need to deal with the quarterback as far as how y'all see this thing sort of panning out or whatnot, so they don't have to go to a coach because Tyler Boyd is giving them the answers that they need. So to me, he's going to be critical in what they do, not necessarily from a statistical standpoint, but from a point of, I know what I need to do. I know what y'all need to be doing. If y'all need to ask me anything, I should be able to help you to alleviate some of the angst, especially a young guy, to alleviate some of the angst of you going to the offensive coordinator slash head coach or the receivers coach. You can come to me, and then I can give you an answer based upon my history and my experience in this offense.
So Paul Kaharsky at paulkaharsky.com revealed his 53-man roster a week out from the end of the preseason, and we were talking about depth in the secondary. Mm-hmm. According to Paul, he's got four locks at safety: Diggs, Hooker, Molden, and Adams. Mm-hmm. He has Matthew Jackson being the last man off at safety, with Molden now available for special teams. At corner, Kaharsky has Snead, Awuzie, McCreary, Brownlee, and Gabe Judy-Lawley. He writes, Gabe Judy-Lawley has been good enough to be a certainty. Trey Avery is a drop-off in coverage, but he'd also be the fifth outside option and the third inside, with Brownlee shifting inside for McCreary if he's hurt. Plus, they have big nickel and dime options that will involve safeties. Avery has played a good bit of gunner on the punt coverage team, which is what gives him his chance. So, according to Paul, his feeling, his informed speculation, he's got Diggs, Hooker, Molden, and Adams as the safeties, Snead, Awuzie, McCreary, Brownlee, and Judy-Lawley as the corners. What do you think about that?
I think that's pretty much spot on. That's the way I would have seen it. I don't think Avery did himself any justice getting beat for a touchdown this past weekend. He's a veteran guy. You're playing against their second and third stringers, and you get flat out beat. You look like a first year corner rather than a, what is it, third or fourth year, somewhere around there. You don't look like a veteran corner. So I just think after that game, he pretty much signed his own papers as far as him being on this team. I think they have some young talent. They need to develop that talent. I think the two guys that he have on that list at corner, both of those guys are young, and they can sort of work their way in this Denard Wilson defense. And they can be taught the things that they need to do. They haven't developed any bad habits just yet. Avery has, and it doesn't seem like he's gotten out of them. I'm not saying that he's a bad player, but he's just, because of the numbers, I don't think he make this roster. He'll be on somebody else's roster, but this roster, where this team is headed, he doesn't have a place.
Paul also has, on the defensive line, he has six: Simmons, Sweat, Joseph Day, and Coburn as his locks, Bohanna and McClendon, the back end guys. But McClendon is injured. He has a turf toe injury, which Paul notes can linger. Marlon Davidson out for the year with a biceps injury. So the question is that line good enough to hold, or are the Titans going to have to seek outside help on the D-line before the season starts?
Wow. I think they're always going to be looking to update this roster. And I think, you know, the GM and the head coach has said as much. If you listen to any GM and head coach in the league, they're always looking to update and improve their roster. So when you're looking at the guys that he have interior-wise, I think this is a good group, but I think a lot of it is predicated on what Sweat is able to do as a first-year player in this defense. So I think if he pops, then that rotation becomes a little less worrisome if he pops. I think the other guys that Paul mentioned have earned their right to be on this team in some facet, whether it be playing, you know, on Sundays or Mondays or Thursdays a lot, or being a special team sort of core guy. So that position, I think, you know, I would say the same guys Paul said, I would say the same, but knowing that they're always looking to upgrade. So that fourth and fifth, or that fifth and sixth guy, just because you made the roster doesn't mean you made the roster. You can make the roster on cut down day that morning, and then by the next day on Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday, they have already replaced you, and now they're looking to move you either to the practice squad or they're just cutting you, period.
615-737-1025, phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Will Levis just wrapped up speaking to reporters at St. Thomas Sports Park. We'll hear what he had to say next. Tune into the Chase and Big Joe show tomorrow from 9 to 11 a.m. for your chance to win tickets to see Sammy Hagar at Bridgestone Arena on August 28th. Contest presented by Green Trees. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick. Derek Mason, 1025-1063, The Game. This week's Nashville Best Deal is Bavarian Beer House, Nashville's only authentic German beer hall, a place full of fun, food, music, and most importantly, beer. Enjoy traditional German bratwurst, schnitzel, giant pretzels, and more in an Oktoberfest-inspired space. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals now to get a $50 gift card for only $25 to Bavarian Beer House while supplies last. Will Levis, Titans quarterback, just finished addressing reporters at St. Thomas Sports Park. Here is what he had to say.
To be able to feel that rhythm before getting out there on Sunday and getting one kind of last opportunity to play as a group together and definitely was a confidence booster. It's cool to get down there. Yet I don't know how many plays that drive was in the call period, but it was good to sustain that drive and finish it on the right note, especially after kind of a shaky start to the day. Being able to pick ourselves back up and lock in for those periods was awesome. So a lot of guys touching the ball. Felt like I was seeing it well and feeling it well, and it's coming together at the right time.
You had the other one early with Traylon out cut to the sideline that was a little bit high, and then I saw him later talking with him and kind of gesturing. Were you discussing that play? What happened on that?
Just the how I thought we could have detailed the route, and he felt one thing and I felt another, and we just got to watch the tape, and when it comes up next time, we are both expecting the same thing. So I could have made him right and at least give him a chance to go up and get it. But just think based on how a corner played it, that we could have kept it a little higher. But, he's got to be confident and fast in his decisions, and I got to put the ball where it needs to be. And both of us, I think, could have been a little better there.
Ryan indicated maybe play a handful of series on Saturday. What did you like to accomplish here? And how do you feel like the readiness level is a couple weeks out from the season?
I think we feel really ready. I think we had the game plan for New Orleans given to us yesterday, the intro to the base down stuff. And it's cool to see a game plan and be like, yep. Pretty much feel like you can go out and play that day. So I feel like we're all in a really good spot with our knowledge of, what's at our hands playbook-wise. And really do think we're in a really good spot. But I think in terms of goals for this weekend, it doesn't change. Just do my job. Not trying to do anything too crazy and, just keep leading us and keeping drives sustained and making the right calls. So I'm excited to go out there and have another opportunity to be clean with our starters.
Tyler can wait back into the fold. Next step for you maybe being get us out of bad plays, when you're up with the line and so forth. I guess, how do you feel your progress is coming along and what are the most challenging things for quarterback?
I think it's when you're given those tools to do those things for the first time, you could second guess yourself pretty easily. You don't have the confidence in the background of doing it in your past. So, but I think I know I have a good enough handle on to know, when things are messed up and what could possibly get us out of that situation. And I think game plan wise, Cal will do a great job too of letting me know what my issues are on that play. And I think it'll be more of hey, if we get this specific look on this, it's not going to work. Let's think about getting into something else. So having that kind of catalog of things to get to based on whatever personnel is out there on the field, based on whatever the coverage we think it is, I think I feel comfortable doing that, and I'm looking forward to getting that point where it comes a lot more natural.
He said you'd all one of the things 20%. That he likes about you that makes him feel like you're that guy is, your ability to bounce back after making a mistake. And he talked about the direct communication that he has with you. What is it that makes you able to bounce back and put that away and then come back and do what you need to do?
I think it probably goes back to earlier in my career when I couldn't do that. As a high schooler and young at college athlete, I think it was very easy for me to let my past affect what's coming up in the future. So I was very emotional. I was, anytime I made a bad throw or a bad decision, I was really down on myself and made me press and act a certain way. But I feel like, you know, towards the end of my college career, I was able to phase that out and understand that it's only going to hurt me and to just keep that neutral attitude with every play. So, you know, we don't want to mess up much, but when we do, we want to be able to come back with the confidence and the ability to go and make the play, whatever that may be, the next play.
He said he thought you'd audible by the end of the season about 20% of the time. You have an estimate for probably what you audible last year?
I couldn't tell you right now, no. I don't know. I mean, by audible, I don't know exactly what he means, like with attached cans or whatever. But
he was talking about checking out, like you said, for trouble.
Yeah, it was probably less than that, probably.
Well, when it comes to Tyler Boyd, and we spoke on him before, but kind of his transparency, and I know even talking with wide receivers on the side after a play, he said he's not shy to vocalize that. How much has that helped in certain situations, maybe not only with you, but these other wide receivers in that room?
Yeah, that's the only way we're going to get better. We can't just, you know, head nod and, yep, we're good. We'll get it next time. We got to talk through it and see what details can be tweaked to make sure that we're more consistent with it. So those guys have done a really good job of communicating with what they see and feel, and I'm being honest with them right back to them. And we're trying to find that middle ground, and when we get the opportunity to watch it afterwards, we can see who may be right, who may be wrong. But it's just good to have those open dialogues and healthy dialogues with each other. So that we can get to the efficiency level we want to get to.
Getting Boyd back into the fold, a veteran player, a guy who knows this offense really well, like, it's, you know, pretty involved today. How much do you feel his presence every time he's in there? And I guess not having him and now having him, like, make you appreciate him just a little bit more.
You say TB, sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I told him that I was happy to have him back. And it was funny. I think the only ball on the ground in RVAs was my first throw to him, and I was like, shoot, might need to dial back up with him. But I felt him, you know, the rest of the day, and he was right where I wanted him to be, and I feel like we got a really good connection, and we just got to keep working. He's a special player. He's been in this league for a long time for a reason. He's got a great understanding of this offense and, you know, what works and what doesn't and how to get us into the best spot to succeed with whatever he's doing. So he's been a lot of fun to play with, and it's good to have him back.
Brian's been pretty optimistic about DeAndre and his hopes of being back for week one. You stay in contact with him, and you feel like what you guys built last year up until the time he left this year, you can kind of hit the ground running?
Yeah, no, it's good to have you know, him here and rehabbing to get back and better for week one. So I was texting him when he was away for a little bit, and I just know that he's working his tail off to get back and be ready to play. But it's, again, going to be another piece that, you know, when someone's hurt for a little bit, it's sometimes hard to remember, like, the contributions that they were able to make when they were there. So we're excited to have him back, and I know he's going to be a big-time player and piece in this offense.
Brian said in a lot of ways for you to make the biggest strides now is about the mundane stuff and kind of mastering the mundane stuff. You kind of agree with that, and it's not very glamorous for an NFL quarterback would picture the big plays and all that, but where are you with the mundane stuff, and is it hard at all to keep focused on the smaller stuff?
For sure, no, I feel really good about it, especially with, you know, reads and not passing up a read to get to what we're really trying to dial up. I think I've done a better job of just taking something if it's open on the first go around, and even though I might think, based on how the play's developing, that bigger shot might be open as well. You know, it's good to have the conversations and watch the film for when that window does get closed and how everything else get closed. And, you know, your one option that you had in the beginning was the only one you really had. So understanding that and just taking what they give me. But it's definitely difficult at times to, like, feel, you know, when's the right time to try to get out of the pocket and make a play or try to stick one in there when the coverage might be a little tight. And that's why I've just been, you know, playing with that throughout camp and feeling like what situations, when they present themselves, are appropriate for those things. I think today in the red zone period, like, we talk about never taking any sacks in the red zone. And I feel like in the back of my mind, I'm really thinking that, and I'm going through 1-2 progression, and I had a throwaway. But in reality, I bet when I watched the film, guys were holding up for a really good amount of time up there, and I could have progressed to that third progression. So it's just going back and forth and feeling when the opportunities are there to try to make those plays and to stick in the pocket or to stick those throws in there, and when it's, you know, the time to just take your medicine and move on.
Brian said that Tony and Tajay are two of the best backs he's ever seen in terms of pass protection. As a quarterback, how much do you appreciate running backs who will stick their head in there, pick up a blitzer for you?
It's awesome to see. You know, fires everyone up in the team room when that tape goes on and everyone knows who the back's got and or he's able to scan across for his guy and just stick somebody. They're not the biggest guys in the world, but they're strong and they're aggressive and they're explosive and they're able to get up underneath those guys and you know, make them feel it. So that's awesome to see. It gets me even more fired up than them ripping a big run. You know, it's them, their sacrifices and contributions for the greater good of the team, and that's what it's all about.
Well, what are you looking to accomplish specifically with the O-line and those starter reps you guys get Sunday?
I think just efficiency, like what I was saying before, being able to be on the same page and knowing the different types of looks that we can get. We might get a variety of looks, especially on third down. So being able to making sure that we know kind of what their packages are and them to be locked in on their combinations. And I want to be able to, you know, feel good back there on third down, dropping back and or whatever we might have at our disposal. So I think it'll be a good opportunity for them with the variety that we think we might be facing. And how about points? That's what we want at the end of the day. So that's what I'm expecting, and that's what we want to get.
Would you have the same kind of freedom to make checks at the line of scrimmage last season or even at Kentucky that you do now?
A little bit. I mean, we would talk like, hey, if we get zero, this is our like menu of answers or what you can get to this versus this. But I wasn't doing much in terms of like if I felt there was a pressure into the run, like getting something else up or what have you. But, yeah, a little bit of last year, not much in college, yeah.
When you are dropping back, like you said, going through your regressions, and you feel the pockets a little bit cleaner, how have you noticed that progress over the last couple of weeks out here at practice when the front five has kind of started to really set itself?
I think it's just their knowledge and their ability to continue to understand our defense and what we play and the different types of games that they're playing up front and the different pressures that we're getting and them to just kind of know it's coming before it even happens sometimes. So when they have that confidence and after they've gotten the reps that they have against this defense, it feels a lot better back there, and they've been doing a good job of holding up their guys. So credit to them, and we just got to make sure that, you know, we're working every week to know those things in a week's time to get ready for those Sunday games. So credit to them. It felt really good back there, and we just got to keep working.
And it said that he welcomes pressure and he likes pressure because it means there's expectations. Mm-hmm. For you, what's your take on that? Is that something that you welcome as well?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant like pressure, like blitzes. I was like, yeah, we love it. We'll smack him in the mouth and more space on the field. Yeah. No, pressure is a privilege, and I feel like I've always felt that. I think the more that you're focused on what other people are going to be thinking about you based on how you act and what the outcome of your actions are, then the more that it can weigh on you. But I think I'm just more solely focused on myself and the people here. And I know as long as I'm just doing my best to work to get myself to the level I know I can get to, then that's all I can do. So pressure's cool. Pressure means there's a lot of eyes on you and there's a lot of people counting on you to succeed. And I welcome it with open arms.
Batch of cologne has sold out.
Yeah, they did a couple of drops. I think we've sold thousands of bottles so far, so I don't know the exact number, but awesome. Just a really, really cool thing. I don't think they're planning on dropping anymore, so that's pretty much it. But they both sold out in a pretty fast amount of time, so yeah, I'm really excited. I don't have a lifetime supply of the cologne, but I might have to add that to the contract, but yeah. I just got one bottle right now. Hopefully I can make it last for a week, but no, it's good stuff. You smelt it obviously, but yeah, a lot of fun.
Notice you talking to Hasselbeck when he was here last week. I know he's kind of raved about you in the past. What's the connection like with him? How much did you follow his career?
Yeah, he was I don't know the exact title they use at the combine, our like mentor / group leader. So he was my group of eight quarterbacks or whatever. He was our guy leading us around Indy the whole week. So he was a great guy to get to know then. And someone, you know, my dad's been in contact with and I've just kind of been in contact with throughout my career. So really respect him and the knowledge he's got for the game. And it's always great seeing him and talking ball.
That was Titans quarterback Will Levis not too long ago at St. Thomas Sports Park, addressing reporters after practice. Derek and I will react to some of what Will Levis had to say on the other side. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.